Basically, I want to talk to you about the way that you work in terms of a typical day. Is there a typical work day?
There's kind of a structure, yeah. Before I had kids, I could be a bit more freeform about the hours I work. Now, if I want to write, I have to do it at a time when there's no interruptions, and that means getting up before everybody's awake, essentially.
At like 6 o'clock in the morning or something?
Yeah, well, more like five. I'll try and get a couple of hours in before the rest of the family get up. So that's my writing time, you know, 2 hours every morning, an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it turns out to be. Then we'll do breakfast and get the kids out the door. And normally I'm back here by nine after doing the school run. And then I'll sort of start the day. Ease my way into it gently by answering emails and things usually before I actually sit down at the drawing board. But normally the rest of my day would be spent drawing. That's...
So basically writing is the beginning of the day and then drawing is the rest of it. Basically.
Yeah, I try to do the writing when I'm feeling a bit fresher. If I've just woken up, I feel like I'm more receptive to odd ideas than I would be if I was fully awake. And the peace and quiet is important, much more important for writing. Then, I mean, there's a lot of elements of drawing that you can do kind of mechanically, like inking. You don't have to really concentrate that hard. It's more of a motor skill. So, yeah, I save that stuff for when there's likely to be interruptions and things where it's going to be less compromised.
Do you listen to music at all when you work, when you write or you draw?
I listen to music that doesn't have any lyrics in it if I'm penciling. Or if I'm writing, sometimes I'll have music like classical music or sort of low-key jazz stuff.
Yes.
I tend to listen to a lot of audiobooks and podcasts and things when I'm doing things like inking. Because, I mean, I read a lot, but I don't read as much as I would like. So it's nice to have audiobooks to sort of fill those gaps. I can feel like I'm doing something productive with my time when I'm inking something that I feel like I've already drawn. So, yeah, and it's, you know, secluded enough that I'm not bothering everybody else in the house with all my audiobooks and stuff.
So basically pencils is where you kind of initially express everything, and inking is just the last bit of the process because everything's out of your head.
You're not solving problems, or you're not solving the same kinds of problems. It's less...
Did you see the penciling as more creative than inking then?
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's the difference between invention and skill, I think. You know, it's
yeah.
Describing inking as a motor skill is not that far off the mark. It's tracing, essentially. Ink is everywhere, roaring with rage, but it is.
Yeah. So are your pencils very tight then?
Pretty tight, although they can be, you know, it depends what I'm doing. For my own stuff, I tend to be a little bit looser than if I was penciling for somebody else, which I've done once or twice. I'll be very tight because it's so easy to misinterpret things. But for myself, it depends what I'm doing. If it's a personal thing, I tend to be quite loose because I'm not having to submit the pencils before I'm inking them. I'm not having to show them to anybody else until the thing is actually finished.
Yes.
And it's more fun, too, to do some of the drawing in the inking stage. I've worked out a process now where I tend to pencil quite small on sort of A5-sized pages. I'll scan those, blow them up, and then print them out as a blue line, and then ink the blue line very, very faintly. So that it's a lot of the drawing that is in the pencils isn't quite so obvious. It's not too on the nose. And I can interpret a little bit when I'm inking, which is more pleasurable for me. It's a little bit freer.
I presume you do a mix of hand drawing, and then do you finish stuff digitally? I mean, how does it work?
I clean things up digitally, but my originals look pretty much like the printed pages. Ideally, I do the lettering on the boards, but a lot of editors don't like that these days.
Really? They want it all as one file, or they just...
Well, it's more, I think, because A, if it's a licensed thing, there's often a lot of corrections to make.
Mm.
And B, for foreign editions, it's a lot easier if the lettering's on a digital file. So, I'll do hand lettering when I'm allowed. There's actually some things that look hand lettered, which I actually did letter on the boards, which I then had to take the lettering off and then put on a digital file so that they could take them out. It's a pain in the ass. But that's how people want it.
I mean, would you ever consider switching to 100% digital? Or do you like the tactile feel of actually sitting in front of the board, drawing with...
You know, I've done the odd page just to see if I could do it. There's a page of Snark that's digital. I have to spot which one.
I'll have to go back and have a look when I get home.
But it slows me down too much. It takes like three times the...
You mean it's slower to draw in digital than it would?
Yeah, much slower.
That's interesting.
Slower.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's largely, you know, because I haven't got used to where all the tools are and everything.
Yes.
You know, so I'm having to look up really basic stuff, like how to rule lines, textbooks every 5 seconds. Also, the kit I've got, I don't have, like, the Cintiq thing where people are drawing on the monitors. I've got this graphics tablet that I've had for years and years, which is no longer supported on the website anymore.
Seriously?
I can't get drivers for it. I have to bodge it with
bloody
the
hell.
Later ones. Yeah, so I've never actually tried the monitor thing, so I don't know if I would...
So you think that it could work, but it's not something you've really...
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'd have to spend thousands of pounds to find out.
Well, that's it, it's very expensive
doing that. Yeah.
You talked about your schedule. Say, for example, you've got a job which you have to get finished. You can't really stick to 9 to 5 or 10 to 6. But would you work until the job is finished, even if it was like 3 o'clock in the morning?
I try not to do that these days. I do work after the kids are in bed most days. When they come home, you know, they do their homework or whatever, and then we'll have dinner around sort of 6 or 6:30. And from that time until they go to bed, I'm generally off. And, you know, that's when I spend some time with them, read them stories. And then after they go to bed, I'll come back up here and finish whatever I was doing. as far as possible. Ideally, I like to have a set goal to finish each day, but if it runs over sometimes, that's what happens. Yes. You know,
is this a place of work? When you go up the stairs, do you feel like you're going to work because you're going to a space which has been allocated in the house?
Yeah, no, I understand, sort of a separation between domestic and business. Yeah, that's pretty much how it works. Yeah, although, you know, obviously the kids don't always respect those boundaries.
No, of course.
So they'll come up here and ask me for stuff or look over my shoulders.
Well, you're used to juggling stuff now, having the kids come in and watch you work, because you said you're quite flexible in terms of working with like other stuff happening at the same time.
I've had to be, you know, I can't be too inflexible. I'd be some sort of monster. Having a family means a lot of compromises, which you have to deal with. It's just part of the deal.
You're obviously well known as a line artist. Have you ever dabbled with watercolour or painting?
Well, I've done a bit of painted artwork in the early 90s for Deadline and stuff. I've got no training, so it's really slow and a lot of trial and error. It would take me a week to do a painted page.
Wow.
Which was not a sustainable model. So, yeah, I've thought about maybe doing a couple of things. I mean, I've got some software, like Photoshop, I could maybe do some watercolours with. And the trial and error aspect wouldn't be quite so arduous. But yeah, I'd have to have a specific project that I wanted to do with that medium.
Do you colour digitally?
Yeah.
Your work is coloured digitally, that way than
painting stuff. But even then, I'm slower than a professional computer colourist would be. So I try to add that off to somebody else whenever possible. But, you know, I do the odd thing. I do covers sometimes. I do the odd story. And stuff of my own that I put on the internet tends to be coloured by myself, obviously.
Yes.
Because, you know, that's a one-man show.
I want to ask you about influences a little. I mean, obviously, there's things like the mad artists, you know, like Jack Davis and the silent movie stuff. Do you still find newer stuff to influence you, cartoonists like yourself?
Yeah, I'm constantly seeing new things that I really like. Not all of it is stuff that connects with me as an influence, because I've sort of got this groove that I'm on these days. And bringing in outside influences all the time would dilute what I'm doing too much, I think.
I guess the question is, what do you enjoy, even if it's not necessarily a conscious influence? I mean, what do you like, you know, either to go and see or read or...
Oh, yeah, I listen to a lot of comedy. I mean, it's great to work to.
There's new Derek and Clive, isn't there? There's like a complete...
Thank you for the tip. I listen to a lot of radio comedy. The Radio 4 is constantly pumping out huge amounts of comedy and drama, and I listen to a lot of podcasts, comedy podcasts. A lot of what I read these days is, you know, I think because I'm spending all my day with comics, I tend to read prose mostly. At the moment, I'm reading some Peter Aykroyd non-fiction stuff.
Oh, really? I like some of his stuff, although I have to say, well, actually, I mean, maybe I shouldn't put this in. I find him a bit lazy because he ends up recycling his own ideas. Like, he did a London book, and then there was a photographic London book, or illustrative one, and there was another one.
The Thames, and then there's London.
And then he split. Yeah, I know he split. I mean, I do admire his work ethic, obviously. So is London, is it something that interests you then?
Yeah, very much.
How long have you lived here? A long time? 20 years? Is it 20 years?
I first came over in 1990, so yeah.
And you've been here since?
Yeah, I went back to New Zealand for 2 years, but
okay.
I've been here more or less ever since, yeah.
It's been a tradition for artists to be sort of outsiders, if you like, looking at things. I mean, obviously, comics is a very American form. Does it inform you at all, do you think, as a creator?
Yeah, I think it does, and I'm making a conscious effort to set things that I'm working on these days in Britain, because, you know, I know very little about America, apart from what I see in the media. I know very little about what's happening in New Zealand these days, because I haven't been back for an extended period for a very long time. So, you know, the most recent things I've done Abigail and the Snowman, which was set in Britain. I'm working on a thing called the Baker Street Peculiars, which is totally London. It's what I know now. I feel Londoners tend to be a disparate group. They tend to be people from everywhere. People who are born in London are, I suppose, they're the majority, but, you know, even the ones who are born in London have parents or grandparents who came from other places a lot of the time.
Our family, we know about 40 generations or something, so about 100 and something years, but we obviously came from somewhere else.
Yeah. But it's just one of those cities that is this big metropolitan melting pot and has been for centuries. And my kids are Londoners, they were born here. Even though they've got French passports.
Yes.
Nice to reflect that in my work.
With things like the net, it's obviously been a godsend for things like the Fred the Clown stuff. It's been amazing. I mean, giving you the flexibility to run strips of your own creation and have the liberty of being able to do this stuff, whereas before you'd have to go to get it printed and published, but now you've got the luxury of the web. Do you see that as democratising things
course,
like that?
Of course it is, yeah. Well, it's a two-edged sword, you know. There's the saying, the great thing about the internet is that anybody can do it, but the worst thing about the internet is that anybody can do it. But it's certainly given a lot of cartoonists access to a platform that they wouldn't have had otherwise, and many of those cartoonists have found, you know, somebody like Kate Beaton, for example, who was initially this internet phenomenon, now she's got published books and everything, but it's just the way people come up now.
Or someone like Warwick Cadwell's a good example because he's internet guy, and now he's obviously moved into print, and I think he's a great artist, but you know, he wouldn't have had the opportunity to show his work if the net didn't exist.
Yeah, yeah, it's another very good example.
So if you're doing something for the web, so for example, if you're doing, say, Fred the Clown story, which is running on the web, do you approach them in a different way? I know they're episodic, but even basic stuff like resolution is different. Do you approach it in a different way if you have, say, a 22-page comic to draw for Boom or something?
It depends what I'm doing. The Fred the Clown strip in the early noughts
was fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, it's still my favourite thing that I've ever done.
Have you ever put it into print?
A lot of that stuff is in print. It was in the
collection.
A lot of that stuff. Not everything. I mean, I kind of weeded out some of the weaker ones.
I just thought that was amazing. I just thought it really utilised the format, like the cliffhanger and the web format. I just thought it did it in such a brilliant way.
Thanks, yeah. Like I say, it's the thing I'm proudest of, really. But for something like that, I was consciously thinking in terms of something that people would only see once a week, and that would be the chunk that they got, and it would have to be satisfying as a chunk. Whereas the Fred the Clown strip I'm serialising at the moment is conceived of as a graphic novel, so I'm not that bothered about whether the page ends on a satisfying beat. It's a different beast, really.
So when is that coming out?
Well, I'm finishing the book. I finished inking it, but I'm still colouring it.
How many pages?
90.
Is that colour?
I'm approaching it like a silent movie, so it's sort of like in the days of silent movies, you would have tints sometimes, like everything would be shades of blue or everything would be shades of red, and they would just sort of tint the entire screen. So I'm sort of taking a version of that approach, sort of daylight scenes that are in sepia, there's a flashback that's in sort of grey tone, and then there's a night scene that's in blue, and there's a dream sequence that's in red. So I'm trying to play with some of the tropes of silent movies. The story is a tribute to Buster Keaton movies.
Oh, nice. So, I mean, Fred is still a character that interests you. I mean, obviously, you've explored him quite a lot over the last 25 years or...
Not quite. Fred, no, mid-90s it would have been that I started doing Fred the
But you still feel like there's other stuff to explore with the character.
Yeah, I'm mixing it up a bit. I think I've got over Fred as a character with no constant relationships with anybody else in the world. I think I've sort of milked that dry, but giving him a different dynamic, giving him connections to other characters, seems to be feeding something in the character that I can play with. So I'm interested in maybe carrying on doing some more Fred stuff with that dynamic.
Comedy, it's interesting. You got something like The Big Bang Theory. I've watched a number of episodes and they're entertaining, but in some ways they're more entertaining when they're kind of more misanthropic, but when you start to flesh them out and make them seem a bit more sympathetic, they become less funny because they're sort of less tragic. Is that a trap that's hard to avoid falling into with comedy?
The thing about sitcom is that nobody evolves, and that's kind of built into the form. Whereas, I mean, if you're doing a self-contained story with a beginning, middle and an end, you can have the characters grow and that's fine, but generally, the laughs tend to drop off towards the end because you've actually got to deliver on something a little bit more meaningful or a little bit more emotional, I suppose. But, I think there's a difference between sympathy and empathy, too. Somebody like Basil Fawlty, for example, you can empathise with him, but you can't sympathise with him because he is a monster, you know, but you can understand that he's a frustrated man who's, you know, and we've all felt frustration, we've all felt trapped. Yeah, there is that difference.
So Fred is evolving, I guess, as a matter of course.
If you evolve, your characters evolve. That's
true.
Kind of how it happens.
I enjoyed your Fing Fang Foom thing from a few years ago.
Thanks very much.
That was actually very, very enjoyable. I really thought that hit the right note. I guess you do kind of see comedy comics, but I guess they can be a bit of a hard sell sometimes.
To the comic shop audience, it's a hard sell. Yeah. Yes. If you get outside the comic shops, it's less of a hard sell.
Of course, yeah.
Getting outside the comic shops is quite difficult with the publishing infrastructure that exists at the moment. I've never quite managed to crack the mainstream book publisher thing.
Muppets as well, and there's no plans to go back to that at the moment.
I've not been asked.
I guess the rights are... What is the rights? Are they with Marvel currently? Because they reprinted your stuff, didn't they, in a collection. I'm assuming that if anybody was... Because there's the new TV series, isn't there?
Is there?
There's a new Muppets TV series starting... I think it's starting in the next month or so.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that obviously there's still interest in there with the two movies, so I wonder if somebody will resurrect.
I think I've done my Muppets.
I guess you did.
I did
quite a long run, wasn't it?
I think I've enjoyed it.
I mean, what about, obviously you did the Doctor Who stuff, but is there any plans for any other?
I've been asked a couple of times to write something for Doctor Who, and it's, the stars haven't quite aligned.
Is it just a question of timing, or?
Yeah, basically. Usually they ask when I'm busy doing something else, or in one case it was just that I kept sending them pictures and they never answered.
Oh, really?
After inviting me to submit pictures.
Yes.
But, you know, that's the wacky world of comics.
So you said you're still finding new stuff to throw into the mix. I said even if it's subconscious rather than conscious. Do you still revisit old favourites?
Yeah, I read a lot of old newspaper strips. If I'm reading comics at all, it tends to be stuff that was before my father was born. Or, you know, some of the more interesting sort of indie stuff. I got the new Pope Hats recently by Ethan Rilley. Which I'm looking forward to. Very difficult to track down in this country. I had to...
Did you see that Bloom County is back? Berkeley Breathe is doing some new Bloom County after a lot. I don't know if that's
I think it's online. I haven't looked at it yet.
I haven't looked at it either.
I never really got into it. But
I liked it at the time. I haven't read it. And it's kind of very sad. I went. There was a signing he did at Forbidden Planet, but had such a small turnout. By right, it's been a long time since those strips were published. And it was a very American sort of newspaper strip, so I don't know if it connected that much over here.
Yeah. I don't know. I find the American sense of humour sometimes is quite difficult to...
But it's different.
It is a different
it's different to ours. There's no question about that. It is quite, but it's just different, I suppose. I mean, you know, it's culturally. I mean, it's quite refreshing, I guess, sometimes to see that not everything is exactly the same.
Yeah.
We don't live in a world where everybody thinks the same.
Yeah, it's nice.
Everybody
that
reacts in the same way. I mean, at least there's some difference.
Yeah, homogeneity hasn't taken over completely.
Do you surround yourself with stuff which kind of makes you comfortable, as well as having stuff that is kind of easily accessible for reference in your studio?
I mean, well, there's a bit of the reference thing. A lot of the reason this space is cluttered with all this stuff is because my family won't have it anywhere else in the house. It can't go in the bedroom. It's not going downstairs. That's, you know, if it doesn't come up here, it gets thrown out. So, yes, this is anything that I want to cling on to.
Yeah.
I actually had to get rid of about 2/3 of my collection at one point because there just wasn't room.
They stay on video still.
Yeah, well, I've updated it. I've just got to put those on eBay at some point.
I love that series. I thought it was fantastic. I really liked it.
Yeah.
I thought the 90s was a great period. That and Drop the Dead Donkey.
I felt like the day-to-day was almost ground zero for British comedy in a way, because a whole lot of things that came after it was just so obviously influenced by that. It was a bit like Python generation earlier.
Have you heard the Absolutely Radio of it yet?
Yeah, I've heard
a couple of
episodes.
Is it any good?
Yeah.
Everyone's back except for
Jack Doherty.
Yeah.
No, I only found out about it a week or so ago. But
I keep meaning
caught
to
up
check
on the
it. Is it is, would you say it's as good as the TV series?
I'm trying to remember the TV
and
series.
And it's been a long time. I haven't seen it in a long time. But
I think the only time I saw the TV series was in, I think, when I came over in 1990.
Yes.
And I was watching it on a tiny black and white set.
Yes.
So I've not got much memory of it. But certainly the Morwenna Banks material, you know, the little girl.
Yeah, is still funny?
That's still
is it?
As good as I remember the TV
show
being.
She was magnificent.
And she's doing a new sitcom with Rebecca Front on Radio 4 at the moment as well.
Oh, really? God, I should check this stuff out. There seems there's a lot of good stuff out there.
It's I haven't heard that yet, but it's called Shush. It's set in a library.
Wow. I think Rebecca Front's very funny.
Yeah.
She's very talented.
Yeah, it does a lot of... I mean, if you look at her CV, you can see all these brilliant things from the last few years.
Mm.
Grandma's House, she was in it.
I missed that, actually. I didn't.
Yeah. But, and, you know, obviously the thick of it.
Yes.
So, yeah. Yeah, but a lot of talent in this country.
I was going to ask, in terms of your speed as an artist, has it got faster or slower over the years?
Slower, I think. Partly because I care about it a bit more. And I try harder to get things right.
Yes.
And also partly because of other demands on my time these days. So even with the quite long hours I work, it's still not the kind of hours I was working when I was younger.
Would you do stupid things? Would you pull like 14 to 16 hour
stints? Well, I still do 16 hour stints, but I don't do them overnight these days.
Oh, okay.
The last time I worked really ridiculous hours was when I was working on the musical Monsters of Turkey Hollow, because it had such a rigid, unflexible deadline.
Really?
Because they wanted to have it out for Thanksgiving. That's the last time I did some really stupid hours. That was last year. And yeah, I would sometimes work until 2 or 3 in the morning, which at my age is a big ask.
I know. But
yeah, these days I try to knock off at 10:30 or so at the very latest, because otherwise I'm just unable to get it together the next day. And
no.
I've not made any time up by working late.
Has this remained fairly unchanged over the last few years in terms of its configuration?
I've added some shelves and things. Because there was just too much stuff, and this used to be more of an open space, but it was open space that I didn't use, so I filled it with shelves and stashed some of my comics and books on it, and that made a difference. Although, you know, like any pack rat, I keep accumulating stuff, and it keeps piling up on the floor, and I have to have a periodical purge.
I mean, are you trying to get more stuff in sort of digitally to try and save
space?
So you have got stuff on either on the Mac or just on an external hard drive or somewhere, just so that you can free up some space?
Yeah, I've got quite a lot of stuff digitally these days. I don't miss the physical objects, really, for a lot of things. For books, I like having books, but for pamphlet comics,
yes,
I'm not that bothered.
I mean, how much reference do you use for art?
If I don't have it in my head, I will look stuff up. For most jobs I do, I tend to look up quite a bit of stuff. I used to just print out reams and reams of the stuff. But these days it tends to go on my iPad, and then I can just sort of flip through it, which is better for the environment and better for the amount of crap that's in my studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the internet's definitely a boon for reference for all sorts of reasons.
No, definitely.
Do you look at things like the old Regency caricaturists, you know?
I've been to a few exhibitions, like the Cartoon Museum.
People like Gilray
and
Hogarth and people like that.
You know, I just sort of admire the technique more than thinking I could do that. All of those people knew how to draw backwards before they decided to abstract it. I've got quite a lot of gaps in my basic art knowledge.
I guess the one thing I haven't talked about is your training. I mean, did you go to art college in New Zealand?
No, nothing at all.
How did you pick it up? Was it just...
I just drew lots, you know, just copied things and drew all the time. Yeah, I've got this kind of the autodidact problem where I've filled in gaps in my knowledge where I needed to fill them. And there are things that led up to that knowledge that I probably should have learned first, but I didn't. And so my technical skills are quite sort of patchy.
So was Knuckles the first thing that you did?
First published thing? Quite close. Not quite, but pretty close, yeah. 88 was the first time it was published in a fanzine, but the first sort of 89 would be when I did the student newspaper strip. And that was sort of my first regular published gig, I suppose.
And that was a nod to kind of American Undergrounds, in a way.
Was there a little bit of that?
Yeah.
Because
it was quite
anarchic,
wasn't it?
Yeah, obviously. Very much. Yeah. I mean, but I think that's something that a lot of young artists go through, that they just...
Get out of the system.
Yeah, try to offend as many people as possible. I think it was a valuable thing to have done. I mean, I was collaborating with Cornelius Stone, who was a writer and cartoonist in New Zealand. And I think for my development at that time, what he was doing was writing stuff that would challenge me to tackle things that I wouldn't have tackled if I'd just been writing my own stuff. So I think that was really useful for my development as a cartoonist. I was just sort of having to deal with things that he threw at me.
The silent movie stuff, is that a love that goes back to childhood? Did you love them since you were a kid? I mean...
Well, I was exposed to some of that stuff as a child on television. I remember seeing Harold Lloyd on television when I was a kid, and some early Laurel and Hardy stuff. But I think when I really fell in love with it was I would have been a university student, and there was a film festival in Auckland which showed pretty much all of Buster Keaton. My brother was one of the film festival's organisers, so I got a lot of free tickets that year. So I went to all of the Buster Keaton stuff. That was jaw-dropping. Absolutely amazing. It was the first time I'd seen a cinema audience give a spontaneous round of applause to a stunt in a film. I totally fell in love with Keaton then. You know, I saw some Chaplin stuff a little bit later, and I sort of appreciated more than loved it, I think. It's the sort of thing that has dated quite badly, I think, because of the sentimentality.
Yes.
Whereas Keaton is very unsentimental.
Is that why people can still watch it now, a long time after it was first made? Because
it's a little bit more modern, I think. It's got that kind of detachment that you see in a lot of modern comedy. Whereas I think Chaplin is a bit more 19th century. Keaton's more 20th century.
So Chaplin was like a throwback.
Well, he was more old world because he was European, whereas Keaton was American.
Oh, true, yes. And I guess, I mean, did you read Mad as a kid? Did you see
Mad? Yeah,
yeah. How hard were they to get hold of in New Zealand?
It's just distributed on newsstands there. Yeah, and it was sort of pretty ubiquitous in the 70s. I think it's maybe more difficult now.
But did they distribute the Coronet books into New Zealand?
I remember
when I was a kid, I remember borrowing the Don Martin ones from my brother, which I love, like Captain Klutz and all these other fantastic... I remember the little paperbacks. I'm kind of sad that they don't do them anymore. I thought it was such a great format. As a kid, I was just blown away.
I don't know if there's a market for the mass market comic paperback. But yeah, I got exposed to the Kurtzman and Elder stuff, the really early Mad stuff, through the reprints that they were doing. They were in the paperback format.
Oh, really?
Like the Mad. So that was quite a key thing. Starchy, I remember, which was the one Bill Elder did, which was a mistake of Archie. It really blew my mind. That one was accurate to the Archie comic of the period, but it was also really subversive and really kind of scuzzy and crummish.
Yes.
And all the sort of detailed cross-hatching and hypodermic syringes sticking out of carpets and stuff. Yeah, that one just rewired my brain.
Do you know what with Joe Lando did you when he was at DC? I just wondered if you ever got the chance to work with any of like the former EC people.
No. That'd be nice.
You've tailored your working. You said you don't work the horrendous hours that you used to work, but you've got a setup that works for you as an artist.
Them on opposite sides of the room, the drawing board and the computer.
Was that deliberate?
I think it was a fortunate happenstance, really. If I'd thought about it, I probably would have done it. I don't know if I did. It was just where things happened to fit. But it's quite good that I can spend extended periods of time at the drawing board without the computer being a constant distraction right next to me.